I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. And I think we have an interesting program for you today. At Illinois State University on Saturday evening at 7 o'clock, the Crescendo Music Therapy Club is presenting a program called A Night of Music Therapy, featuring Dr. DeForia Lane, who is Associate Director of the Ireland Cancer Center and Director of Music Therapy at University Hospitals of Cleveland. She spoke with me just yesterday, I think, and enjoyed the conversation. We'll talk a little bit about her work in general and some of what she'll be doing at that presentation on Saturday. Second part of the show, it's John Mosca, who is director of and lead trombonist with the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, which will be performing Saturday night in Urbana at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And we'll hear some of their music on the program. It's Live and Local here on FM 90.9. That was the opening of four romantic pieces for violin and piano by Antonín Dvořák, the brother-sister duo of violinist Gil Shaham and pianist Orly Shaham here on FM 90.9. This is a test of the emergency alert system. That was a test of the emergency alert system. This is WILL-FM Urbana. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Allison Robert Campbell. And the program is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Saturday evening at the Center for the Performing Arts at Illinois State University in Normal, Dr. DeForia Lane of the Cleveland University Hospitals of Cleveland and the Ireland Cancer Center there will be presenting a program called Night of Music Therapy, which will include both some talk and some music and some video presentations about her work. And I had a conversation with her yesterday in which she addressed all of that. I started simply by asking her how she got interested in the topic and what, in fact, is music therapy.
Since I was 5 years old, I recognized the changes that came about when music was in the room. I watched it in the face of the elderly in my church. They seemed more animated and, quite frankly, jubilant. I noticed it in my mother, who's very, very shy, and but when she sat at the piano, her posture changed, her whole persona was different. And when my father would sing, my toes would rumble. I mean, literally, I could feel the vibration. I watched people cry when songs were meaningful to them. And a part of me longed to know, even at age five, what is it in music that touches us so and moves us so observably? And as life went on, as I grew up, I heard of this profession called music therapy. And in short, it's the use of music to address or nurture a person both physically, psychologically, spiritually, and emotionally. And I had no idea that there was a meaningful, intentional way of using music to help people. And the profession actually started in 1950 it was long before that. Physicians were noting in the veterans' hospitals, as men were returning from war, they saw how music, when it was a daily part of their protocol, it actually made men more compliant, less complaining, And they wanted to know if that was anecdotal or if it literally had something to do with music's effect. And so our profession was started at the University of Michigan. There are now 70 colleges and universities that offer a degree in music therapy, and approximately 7,000 music therapists across the country.
That's wonderful. And I understand Illinois State University has one of those programs.
Yes, they do. And in fact, I will be addressing a community of people there next on Saturday and talking about the use of music therapy throughout the lifespan. The literature is rich with research and practical ideas of how music can affect us from first cry to last breath. So I'll be talking about our use of music in the neonatal intensive care unit. I'll even give an example of using music with unborn children and the use of music to teach literacy skills. We have an outreach program with that. How we are reaching into poor communities to provide information and inspiration about how to care for oneself when it comes to cancer, pre-screening and testing and so forth. And probably one of the most intriguing things I'll share is our use of music with cancer patients. This is Breast Cancer Prevention Month and Cancer Awareness Month, and we have some wonderful means of using music for everything from pain to relaxation.
And I know you have a personal experience to share in reference to cancer, which we can perhaps get into in just a little bit. But that's really an incredibly wide range of applications for music therapy. I'm wondering about the very, very earliest one you mentioned, the prenatal, I guess, with unborn children. How does that work? And then how do you know that it's doing anything?
We've seen in the literature, in other words, researchers have noted how music, when applied literally to the abdomen, I've taken pairs of earphones and put them on my own during the time I was carrying my children. And what I'd notice is if the baby was extremely active or doing a little dance, then I could use music that was calming to me and the rhythm of which was slower than the baby was moving, and the baby would become quieter. There was this sense of perhaps, I think, listening. Babies develop their hearing as early as 4 months in the womb. So the idea of the music in training to it, in other words, slowing down to kind of match what the music is doing rhythmically. Similarly, I could play something like the Beatles or a little Motown, and the baby would, start dancing. So what we've done in the NICU, babies who have a difficult time learning to suck because they are very premature, we have inserted a computer chip in a pacifier, and when a baby makes the slightest attempt to suck on that pacifier, it is hooked up to a CD player, let's say, we'll call it that, that activates the music immediately so that the baby is reinforced with music when they suck. And the beautiful part is it doesn't take very long for the child to get the cause and effect, so that within less than 5 minutes, a baby can learn, if I suck on this, the music will come on, and they will do it more and more. So we've also learned that babies calm quicker, and their oxygenation levels go down. When they are in the presence of calming music. And so there are certain criteria for that. We can't use acid rock, of course. So it's fascinating, I think, how we can use the components of music, the harmony, the melody, the rhythm, to actually affect a child that early.
You have, I've thought of this horrible pun, but you've just given entirely new meaning to the idea that certain kinds of music suck.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. But I walked into that one.
I really couldn't help myself there. I apologize. But you did anticipate one of my questions, which is, you know, when we talk about music therapy, how do different types of music affect people? And I imagine the answer would have to be, at least in part, it depends on the person.
You're absolutely right. We respond best to the music we like most. When I play taps for soldiers, they automatically think of waking up in the morning or a battlefield or an experience where they were, when they heard it, and the people they were with. When I play it for young boys, they think of scouting and being out in a tent. Totally different meanings and totally different responses in terms of their physical vital signs, heart rate changes, respiration changes, and certainly the emotional content you see in their eyes. So our nationality, ethnicity, the situations where music was played, all of those things factor into how we can use it. What's very calming for me in a moonlight sonata or a Beethoven hymn might totally make someone else feel like moving and ennobled and standing. And so it just depends on what you want to accomplish with the music as to how, when, and in what circumstances it can be used.
And of course, with the younger people, whether they are born or not born, it's very difficult to ask them, well, what kind of music do you like?
Yes, and that's when you look at the monitors. That's when you, for example, walking into a baby's room and they, babies who are premature, they provide you with how they're feeling. You look at the monitors. So they have what we call a scrunch face, like if you're really frowned up and a pouched mouth and wrinkled brow. They also splay their fingers as though reaching out. They deoxygenate. Their oxygenation levels go way down. And so when we start playing or humming, there's a technique called multimodal stimulation. And one of those ways is you don't start humming and rocking and stroking a baby all at once because that's too much input. And they, you can watch their oxygenation levels just plummet, and you can watch all of the signs of a stressed child within moments. But if you layer those things, you start humming first, and you do it quietly and slowly. And then if a baby tolerates that, then you add stroking in certain parts of the body and in certain directions. And if the baby tolerates that without any signs of stress, then you add more. And the final one is the movement, the rocking. So we're learning how to developmentally help that child get to where they need to be by the use of music and watching how they respond.
You're listening to a conversation with Dr. Deforia Lane, Associate Director of the Ireland Cancer Center and Director of Music Therapy at University Hospitals of Cleveland. She will be giving a program called Night of Music Therapy, presented by Illinois State University's Crescendo Music Therapy Club at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts, Saturday evening at 7 o'clock. in Normal, and you're hearing it in Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'll continue with the rest of that interview in just a moment. We spoke yesterday, but I asked her afterwards if there were any particular pieces that she found especially therapeutic, and this is one that she offered. Cellist Stephen Isserlis with pianist Thomas Adas in the famous segment from Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, known as The Swan, here in Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. That music was suggested by my guest on this portion of the show as something particularly therapeutic to her personally, and we'll continue with that conversation with Dr. DeForia Lane in just a moment. Later on in the show, a conversation with John Mosca, who is director of and lead trombonist with the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, who will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana Saturday evening. Dr. Lane will be in Normal Saturday evening at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting a program called Night of Music Therapy. She is director of music therapy at University Hospitals of Cleveland. And we continue with that conversation here on Live and Local with myself, Kevin Kelly. This was, we talked yesterday afternoon. I know that for the talk at Illinois State on Saturday, you're going to be bringing an interesting instrument as well as your own voice along for a demonstration. Can you give us an idea of how you might use that at the talk, but I guess more to the point, how you might use it in a real-life situation?
Sure. Here at University Hospitals, our Ireland Cancer Center, for whom I work, I see patients at their bedside, and their families sometimes are there with them, too. One of the difficulties of being diagnosed with cancer can be, for some, very distressing emotionally. And so one of the ways I offer music to them is to say, if you could write a song for someone, for whom would it be, and what would you say? I take down their thoughts, their ideas, their phrases, and I ask, and to what kind of genre of music would it be? Would it be a country western sound or an operatic aria type sound or something a little more country? What is it that you would like? And then I take that and set it to music. And sometimes they want it recorded, put on a CD, so that they can offer it as a gift or remember it. So in short, I'm taking all of that's going on the inside and giving it a voice, putting it on tape and providing it for them, which ends up being something artistic rather than something that they're holding and that might not be doing them the best health-wise. So I use an instrument called an omnichord. It's made by Suzuki, and it sounds a little like this. So a little bit like a harp, and I can adjust its rhythm and volume just by the touch of a hand. A gentleman, a young 67-year-old woman wanted to create a song for her daughter, and she told me all about her, and this is one of the verses that resulted from that. Come sit beside me, daughter, there's so much I have to tell. These words come from my heart and from my soul. From the baby I remember to the woman you've become, it sends Jesus in control. she goes on to talk about how her daughter helped her to just settle down and listen and think. And then she begins to thank her daughter in a way that that brought tears to my eyes. And her daughter came to visit her the following day, and her mother said, "Daughter, I have written a song for you." It was one of the most meaningful moments for me to watch a mother sit in the middle of the bed and her daughter put her arms around her, and they just simply rocked with each other to the music. I've seen children write songs for their parents, or mothers who are very grateful for a father watching a child while she's having a mastectomy, and wanting to express her love for the man for caring for her and the support. I've written songs about diarrhea, mm-hmm. songs about though I may not see you, I know that life will be fine. I mean, I think the powerful use of music to give a person a way to say something that people may listen to much more easily through music, through song, than through words is a gift to me.
So you sing all the, you do the singing on all of the recordings that you make?
Well,
or
no.
Not necessarily?
Not at all. If the patient is willing to sing too, definitely. If the family comes in, we include them as a part of it. It's not, I teach my interns this phrase, it's not about me, it's about giving the patient what they need. And if I feel that they are willing and can be cajoled into singing, and most patients do it automatically. It's something that just bubbles up to the top and they come through. Some need a little more encouraging, but yes, I like giving them the floor.
I was going to ask if, you know, if you did do all of them, how well you manage all the different styles, and including, you'd have to be pretty versatile, I think, you know,
well,
to go from country to spiritual to, you know, your own compositional style and so on.
Yes, and to rap even, heaven forbid. But yes, I have done that. It can be comical, to be honest. It's a bridge-building affair when we create songs together. So, and I have no problems calling upon people whose skills lie in that area far better than mine to assist. So I will call on somebody. I've had to write songs in foreign languages because we have patients who don't speak English. So, oh yes, I call on plenty of help.
Are there ways that people can, just ordinary people who aren't necessarily sick or anything, but either in depressive situations or other situations where they really could use some help, where they can treat themselves musically?
Mm. Yes, indeed. We are our best discerners about what our needs are. One of the difficulties of people who are depressed, I work with a group of mood disorder patients here at the Cancer Center, and one of the things that they say it's hard to do is to get up in the morning, just to get started. It's hard to get out of the house, to move from one place to another. There's just no oomph. There's no motivation. So one of those things I have suggested is to find music that makes you feel good. That may be a John Philip Sousa march. It may be a gospel song. It may be a country song that makes you, that you can't help but tap your toes. So once you've found something that evokes a certain physical or emotional high for you, use that as a means to give vent or start to the day. If there's a partnership with someone, having an accountability partner always helps to make sure you can do that. Some people have trouble resting, relaxing, going to sleep. Go to the library and look for music that literally makes you feel calmer. And try different instrumentations, everything from harp to a flute to an orchestral piece, Pachelbel's canon. Listen to different things, and you might specifically look for environmental sounds, water, the sound of rain, or birds. Some people are outdoors people, and it takes them back to a time that they remember that's quite calming and satisfying. So those kinds of, we call them auditory cues, can trigger the body to either feel more relaxed or to create some energy. So those are two ways I'd suggest.
And I imagine that many people might even just find that little part of this conversation personally useful. Which I imagine is at least some of your point in talking to anybody about music therapy. And I wish we had time to talk about all of the many other areas, because this is all fascinating to me. It's something that, you know, I've heard about for a long time, and I've even known a couple of music therapists here and there, but I never really knew how one might apply it. And it seems like the options are endless.
I would agree wholeheartedly. I'm particularly interested in showing some video clips of the results of a person with stroke, a person who's has Parkinson's disease, where I'm going to make it as visual, as first-hand experiential, and, of course, interweave it with some of the facts and research. And I always include something personal, having been a cancer survivor twice now, I think people listen with different ears when they know a person has walked in those shoes. So I look forward to celebrating with people who want to know more and to find ways that music can be good or a benefit to them and those they love.
Dr. DeForia Lane, who is Associate Director of the Ireland Cancer Center and Director of Music Therapy at University Hospitals of Cleveland, who will be presenting a program called Night of Music Therapy, presented by Illinois State University's Crescendo Music Therapy Club, Saturday evening at 7 o'clock at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. You heard that conversation here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. It was a tune called All My Yesterdays by Thad Jones. It was performed by the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, which began life as the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra at the Village Vanguard in New York City. They will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana Saturday night to give a concert at 7:30, and we'll have a conversation with their lead trombonist and director in just a moment here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Here are a few other concerts you can go attend in the next few days. Celtic Woman is at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield tonight at 7:30. Coming up in a little bit this afternoon at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington, it's a faculty recital by saxophonist Keith Zimmerman and pianist William West. It's going to be at Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall on the IWU campus in Bloomington, 3 o'clock today. Tomorrow at 5:30, it's the bluegrass group Strings Attached at the Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood, Kickapoo State Park, 5:30 tomorrow. Illinois Wesleyan's Civic Orchestra is giving a concert tomorrow night at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts at 7:30. At the same time, tomorrow night, also in Bloomington, Barocan Consort is performing a program of mostly early music at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bloomington Normal, 7:30 tomorrow night. And there's lots and lots of theater in the area as well. And I wish I had time to run that all down, but I'd invite you to check various newspapers and the websites of the Station Theater, Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater, Parkland College Theater, and let's see who else is presenting things this weekend. Je Demi Productions in Decatur, and that's what I see here. Oh, the University of Illinois Department of Theater also. On tomorrow's Live and Local, we will talk with pianist and conductor Ian Hobson. During the first part of the show, he's releasing some new recordings of music by Chopin. Second part of the program will focus on the concert by Sinfonia da Camera, which is Friday night at the Krannert Center, Mr. Hobson conducting, and also featuring vocalists Ricardo Herrera and Yvonne Redman, both of whom will be with us on the show tomorrow. That's from 12 to 1 on Fridays, Live and Local. Our program today is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. Artist receptions, interviews with artists, and other special programs are offered to interpret the exhibits. Yesterday, I talked with John Mosca, who is lead trombonist and director of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, going to be at the Krannert Center Saturday night. And I started by asking him, what is so special about the Village Vanguard in New York City?
Well, for one thing, the management is consistent. I mean, it's been Max Gordon, the founder, had a pretty unerring eye and ear for talent. If you go back over the roster of people who were unknowns before they appeared there, like Woody Allen and Barbra Streisand and Nicholson May, Leadbelly, when it had one of his first indoor gigs there, and then Max's wife, who is running it now, Lorraine Gordon, was instrumental in having him commit to a full-time jazz policy. And she had been married to Alfred Lion at Blue Note Records before meeting Max and later marrying him. And so she really knows the music and the fact that the club has been there over 70 years. And aside from that, the place just accidentally has terrific acoustics. It's shaped like a horn. It kind of fans out in a sort of a Y shape from the bandstand. And there's a mural on the back wall, like an abstract mural on the back wall, and it all just seems to work well. Things really just sound good, and it feels good to play there.
So is it essentially, specifically a music place? You go, I've never been there, you sit down and listen and have a drink? Or?
Yep, it's a real old Greenwich Village jazz club downstairs. You walk down a steep set of stairs, pay a cover charge, and start drinking. And the guys blow, you know.
Yeah, and so is there jazz pretty much every night?
Yeah, it's six nights. There's a six-night act, you know, somebody who's the featured performer for the week, and then there's us on Mondays.
Every Monday?
Mm-hmm, that we're not on tour.
For the last 40 years?
43, yep.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're working on it was a three-week handshake agreement between Thad Jones and Mel Lewis and Max. He said, okay, well, you know, it was an experiment. Because Monday night was traditionally the dark night in New York. Clubs, theaters and clubs were closed. And that was just the tradition for a long time. And Thad and Mel and Dan Morgenstern, actually, the jazz writer who was friend of the band, said they had the idea to go approach Max and see if they could go in on a Monday. And he said, well, let's try it for 3 weeks. And we haven't had another conversation since, actually, in terms of if we're still on this bait, working on the same agreement.
That is really incredible.
Yeah.
And then Thad left the band, Mel Lewis died, and the band goes on. The band played on.
Yeah.
It continues to play on. And when did you become the director?
Well, it's something that's just kind of evolved. Mel began taking off a little bit in the 80s to go. He was being hired for some very good money over in Europe to play with various radio orchestras. And so I would lead the band while he was away. And, you know, of course, when he got sick and then, and of course passed away, he's away now. So it just kind of became a natural thing for me to continue doing it.
So have you been, how long, have you been with the band since the beginning?
No. but I have been with the band since 1975. I just found an old itinerary.
So that's itself 34 years.
That's a long pull.
So when you're not with the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, which is Monday nights,
right,
or on tour, where else do you play?
Well, we all have basically the same similar stories. We do a little bit of teaching. I teach at William Patterson University and in New Jersey, and I do, you know, other jazz gigs with small groups. Of course, we all love to do small group playing too, and so there's little clubs around here that I work in. Smalls is one of them, a noteworthy New York club called Smalls. And to do some commercial gigs, I record with John Pizzarelli, a terrific guitarist and singer, and I also do a little bit of work on the Broadway shows, a substitute for friends who are doing that kind of work. So there's always something to do.
So you're one of the many fine gigging musicians in New York City and around there.
That's it.
Essentially. So the band is pretty big, it seems like.
Yeah, it's kind of the standard big band instrumentation. Four trumpets, four trombones, five saxes, piano, bass, and drums.
And how has the sound and even the type of music varied over that period of time, and how much has it stayed the same?
Well, that's interesting, because Thad Jones was really, a very advanced arranger, kind of the Duke Ellington of his generation, I would say. And so his music, the music that the band that they wrote back then, the primary writers were, of course, Thad and Bob Brookmeyer, who was one of the original members. The music they wrote really still holds up, so we still do play a lot of that music, but we've been actively, commissioning music all the time. Jim McNeely is kind of our artist in residence, the pianist. Unfortunately, he won't be with us on Saturday, because Jim is really, his career has kind of taken off as a writer. He's in demand all over the world now, so he's conducting and writing for other outfits. So,
although that's a little ironic, because he's an alumnus of the University of Illinois.
Exactly. Yeah, we were really sorry that we couldn't work it out the way the dates fell. It didn't work out for him to be there, but his music will be there. That's the most important. We'll play one or two things from the projects he wrote for us. He wrote two CDs for the band, and we have one of his older pieces actually on our latest CD. So we'll do something from the CD projects, and of course there've been other writers too. Bob Mincer wrote an album for us. Micah Benny has stuff in the book. A wonderful woman named Julie Cavadini wrote some things that we recorded. So new music has continued to come in. And our latest, we've commissioned Bob Brookmeyer to write our next CD, and we'll be doing a selection from that too.
So will that be all his compositions, or some of them arrangements of other people's tunes?
No, that'll be all him.
And so I assume on the presentation you'll give in Urbana on Saturday, mm-hmm. it's going to be a mix of new and old?
Yeah, that's what we usually do.
So lots of classics, lots of standards. Give us some samples of what's likely to be on the playlist.
Ooh, we never really have it until kind of the last minute. We're always figuring out the audience, but I brought a good selection. We might play Central Park North, which is the Thad Jones. That was one of the title tracks, one of the band's classic records. We might do a Thad Jones chart on Easy Living, a great arrangement, one of the last ones he did for us while he was with the band. There's a we have a Brookmeyer piece that was part of a suite that he has on the new record, and it's called Scott. It was written for Scott Wenholt. It's so that's one of the brand new things. One of the McNeely ones, we have the title track from the record he did for us called Up From the Skies, which is actually a composition of, his name just slipped my mind, guitarist famous at Woodstock. Oh boy. Rock and roll guitarist.
I'm not going to be able to help.
Oh, it's wild. All of a sudden, I just blanked out. I just blanked out on his name.
That's okay.
Well, there you go. Maybe it'll come back in the course of our conversation. Up From the Skies is the name of it.
So whatever you're playing, and I missed my pause button yet again, the piece that the composer he was trying to remember, the guitarist, was Jimi Hendrix, which I found as I was looking through some of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra CDs. We are talking with John Mosca of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, which will be at the Krannert Center on Saturday evening. And here is some of that tune that he was mentioning by Jimi Hendrix, is arranged by Jim McNeely, University of Illinois alumnus. It's called Up From the Skies. Example of the tight ensemble and harmonies of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, directed by John Mosca, the lead trombonist, and an arrangement here of Jim McNeely of a Jimi Hendrix tune called Up From the Skies. It's from their disc called Up From the Skies, music of Jim McNeely, Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, coming to the Krannert Center Saturday evening. You're hearing them in Live and Local on FM 90.9. Continuing my conversation with John Mosca from on the telephone from New York yesterday, I asked him what distinguishes the sound of the orchestra.
Well, largely it is the quality of the writing is really a big part of it. And the soloists are kind of unique. You know, we have people like Rich Perry and Scott Wenholt, and
Rich Perry is tenor sax.
Tenor sax, yeah.
And Scott is
trumpet.
Trumpet.
And
okay.
So the Joe Magnarelli will be with us on this trip, another great trumpet player. And I don't know, it's kind of the approach. It's really the soloist is a little more important than they are with many other bands, you know, especially ones that are started by writers. Thad and Brookmeyer both being fantastic instrumentalists, in addition to being great writers, it kind of helped it evolve in that direction where the soloist had a little more to do.
So they just literally take it more of a lead role than in the average big band?
I would say yes, yeah. I mean, I think that's changed largely because of the influence of this band, I think. Most big bands now do allow soloists more room. And I think that's one of the changes that was brought about by Thad and Mel.
Hmm. So it's been a pretty influential orchestra. Well, it had to have been.
Yeah.
I mean, how many bands have been around for that long?
Not too many. And, of course, that was a kind of a strange period to start one because it was a kind of a down period for jazz in the late 60s when it got going. You know, rock and roll was taking off and going crazy, really, and so jazz wasn't doing that well. And but the band really had terrific success. The critics really went crazy for it. And I was a kid in New York when the thing got started, and I was one of the people waiting online to get in. There was big lines to get into the club to hear it on Mondays, And at that time, there were many weeks when Monday was the best night in terms of attendance.
And how is it now?
It's good now. It's really solid. We have a pretty very steady following. Of course, like everything else in New York, 9/11 was a big hitch in everybody's plans, you know. But we were down for a while there, but it's come back pretty well.
The membership of the band, how steady does that tend to be? I know with a lot of groups that are made of gigging musicians, that can be a problem. But what
yeah,
about
well,
your group?
Actually, it's quite good. We have turnover is pretty rare, and part of that is, of course, the quality of the music. You know, and the guys really come back to play when you know, they're great players and great music. So it's a really good experience. It's not, you know, nobody gets rich doing this, God knows, but we do have a great time at it. So that really keeps people involved. Of course, guys get busy. The fact that we don't offer anybody full-time employment, of course, means that we have a core of substitutes. But being New York, once you have a substitute who's steady, he's like a regular member, really. You don't lose anything when you have one of the regulars out. So we're pretty confident whenever we go out that we have really a top outfit.
Everybody speaks the language.
Yep, exactly right.
Tell me about this education program that the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra has, Precepts of Swing.
Right. Well, that's it's one of those things that evolved. You know, it was kind of a natural outgrowth of, especially with jazz, has been in the last 25 years or so, that we're kind of connected with education. And so we, over time and doing clinics, we did evolve a kind of a program to acquaint people with how we function, you know, how the band works, how we get it to work the way it does. And basically, you know, about communication between the sections and how we listen to each other and things to look for in the music and various, you know, all the ins and outs that we try to get to students or to actually any interested party. We've done the clinic for people who are just really real jazz fans and want to know more about it. That's something about jazz that perhaps you don't, you know, get with popular music, is that the more you learn about it, the better the experience.
Conversation with John Mosca of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, appearing at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Saturday evening at 7:30. And that conversation here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, I spoke with him yesterday while he was in New York City. Support for our broadcast today comes in part from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, now with a new dinner menu. Tapas served every evening until 2 a.m., along with lunch on Friday from 10:30 to 2:30, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Information on menus, wine, and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com. Coming up in just about a minute, I'll have a weather forecast for you. We have news headlines at a minute past one from NPR, and Julie Amacher has classical music for you starting at 1:06. On tomorrow's show, pianist and conductor Ian Hobson and vocalists Ricardo Herrera and Yvonne Redman, having to do both with Mr. Hobson's new CDs of Chopin's music and also with the concert Friday night by Sinfonia da Camera in Urbana. Here again is the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra. It's a tune by Duke Ellington called Sophisticated Lady.